Welcome back, everyone. This is the Prepared Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Austin, and we have another episode for you guys. You know the deal. Every week, we are rolling out fresh new content to you guys with guests. Not always. Sometimes it's just me pontificating on different thoughts and feelings. Sometimes Josh is with me hanging out, having discussions. But a lot of the time, you guys know the drill. We have some very insightful and exceptional individuals that join us here on Prepared Mindset, and we're able to parlay those conversations into shared learning experiences. So this will never be, if you're just joining us for the first time, this is never going to be the podcast that's going to tell you, hey, if you're not doing this, you are wrong. Or, okay, I don't want to say we'll never tell you that you're wrong. But we try not to be that way. This is a shared learning experience. I'm always very vocal about it. I don't have military or law enforcement experience. I'm just somebody that shoots and trains, wants to learn the right way to do things, and is always looking for an outside insight to illuminate on some of these subjects. So depending on walks of life, you know, we've had some very outspoken individuals. We've had some very reserved individuals on this podcast. It's a very good mix, a very strong blend, I would say, of thoughts and feelings and perspectives and experiences. You know, we've had people like Matt Pranka has been on the podcast. You guys, you know, take a stroll down memory lane and check that one out from, I think that's two summers ago. Blake Flannery, a lot of you guys know him from Maneuver Training Solutions and Orion Training Group. Guys like Devin Soto at Tactical Cowboy. I mean, the list goes on. We've had some Dutch Moyer, Bob Keller, right? Some unit guys, right? That, you know, along there with Matt and everything. So we try to, I say this because we want to bring together a blend, a mesh of different ideas. And that's, you know, kind of what is going on here this week with Randy Turner, who is a returning guest from, I want to say it was like July, Randy was on. And if you guys don't know who Randy is, you haven't made it to that episode, that's fine. We'll give you some just brief background on Randy. I try not to get too in-depth in the intros here. But Randy is former JTF-2, so that's Canadian Special Forces, which is something that we don't get a lot of insight into here, at least on this podcast, is how our other countries in the world, especially close partner forces, and especially at that tier one level, how they operate, how they do things. So this week, I get to sit down with Randy, and we're going to talk about, this is a very broad subject, which means that we're probably going to take it a lot of different ways, which is a very good thing. You know, is we're talking training philosophy, and why this is so interesting, at least to me. One, I'll say I don't usually go into most of these interviews, most of these discussions, right, with a set list of questions, with a set and predetermined idea of exactly what I want to do, because I want to hear the truth, you know, not that I think anybody's lying, but like, I want to get like that raw, that unfiltered, that unprepped, response and answer from people, that can really help guys like you and I who want to learn more, who want to understand more. So talking to people like Randy and some of the individuals I rattled off a moment ago, that's a great opportunity. And I've been looking forward to this discussion. If you guys did check out the last one that I had with Randy, you know that we talked a lot. We talked about training. We talked about politics. We talked a bit about society and culture. It was a very, very good discussion, which is why I was very happy to be able to get some more time on his very busy schedule and get him back on the podcast to sit down and talk about this stuff. And it's an interesting topic. We've covered it a bunch before, but it's always different from one individual to the next, right? So based off of personal experiences, based off of personal opinion and feeling and things like that, you're always going to get different answers, and not like drastically different, but you get, it's like ice cream, right? It's all ice cream, but it's a different flavor each time. So the overall message is training better, training with quality, self-improvement, high standards, high effectiveness and efficiency, and becoming more capable, right? Those are all underlying themes anytime that we have any of these people on, any of these exceptional individuals, right, who've performed at very, very high levels, be it in law enforcement or military or at the federal level in law enforcement, perhaps, whatever have you, right? So it's different, but it's the same. And I like those discussions because, you know, you have then a basis to draw off of with past experiences. For me, it's past discussions. For some of you guys, it may be past discussions I've had, or, you know, other discussions and recordings and printed text from some of these individuals out in our community that share this kind of thing very often. So you have something to draw off of, you draw a comparison of sorts, right? And then from that, we are able to establish personal growth. I think it's a beautiful thing. I'm very much looking forward to this discussion. I think you guys are really going to dig it. It's one of the more rare opportunities to talk to individuals who've operated at the highest of levels. But especially, right, you know, I don't want to just harp on the fact that Randy is Canadian, but it's a different animal, you know, seeing into how a foreign government and a foreign military, how they look at things, their philosophies, their mottos, their perception on things. It's going to be a little bit different, right? And of course, understanding that JTF-2 does train at the same levels with the unit, with SEAL Team 6 or DevGru or whatever the hell we're calling, you know, SEALs these days, right? So there's a parallel to draw to that, and that creates a certain level of, a higher level of just overall understanding of where this is coming from, if that makes sense. As we're sitting down and talking through it. So not to belabor this point, but it should be a very good discussion. Very, very good. Now, before I'm able to get over to this week's guest, you know, we have some outstanding sponsors here on the podcast. If you guys have been listening for any real length of time, you know, we've been doing this for over 4 years now, honestly, which is crazy to say. You've seen we've gone through some partners, we've come out of some situations, things, you know, come, go, they change, whatever. But we have some exceptional partnerships we've been able to forge over the last, I don't know, a couple months, couple years in some instances. And these are companies that not only are able to support us so that we can support you all through your growth and your learning and your individual journeys, but they help us keep things going. They help us grow. They provide us with some really, really great opportunities. And we want to make sure that we share all of that with you guys. They're partners of ours. We'd love to make them partners of yours. So if you are in the market for some goods, some services, even depending on what you're looking for, obviously, right? These are some companies that we have done our due diligence with, that we have been customers of personally before we were ever partners with them. And that's true with every one of them. And want to take a moment here to point that out, to share it with all of you, and take just a moment to tell you about who they are and why you guys should spend some of your hard-earned money with them. So with that, I want to start first with Custom Night Vision. You guys, the website is customnightvision.com. You're looking to get into night vision. If you have questions on night vision, the guys over at Custom, whether it's Trevor or Kevin or Ben, very, very knowledgeable, very insightful dudes, and Custom will take fantastic care of you. We can say this confidently because I just went through probably the smoothest RMA process I've ever been through from a customer service perspective, sending back the MH1 that they pushed out to me, and it wasn't anything that Custom did wrong in the assembly. It wasn't something or anything that Lowlight Innovations did. It was just one of those unicorn things where, hey, there was just an issue that happened to squeak through QC, and they were within a week. And I mean this, you guys, like Monday at 3:30, it was being dropped off at FedEx here in Michigan. By Tuesday, it was in Rhode Island at Lowlight Innovations. By Thursday, it was in Houston back at Custom. And by Friday evening at 5:30, I had it back in my hands. Absolutely exceptional service, you guys. Again, the website is customnightvision.com. So whether you're looking to get into a set of the MH1, which is a fantastic housing, I really, really like it, or you want something different, maybe a DTNVS, or you're really into the AB Night Vision offerings because they're built like, you know, a brick shit house and you want to just chuck your stuff against a wall, cool. Custom Night Vision will take care of you. They stock all of those housings. They do all the assembly work themselves in-house for the most part. I think there's a couple L3 solutions that they don't build themselves, but fantastic guys. They're making a fantastic product, and their goal, their mission is to provide you all, the consumer, with the most transparent night vision purchase experience that they possibly can. And it doesn't matter what it is, guys, whether you're doing what Josh did, where you, hey, I have this PVS-14, I'd like to match it up with another tube you guys have and swap me into a dual housing like an RNVG. That's what Josh did. Great. He loves it. Or you're looking to buy your first mono setup. You're looking to get into your first bino setup and you have questions on green or white phosphor, Elbit versus L3 or Photonis or NNVT. The guys at Custom will take great care of you. Again, the website is customnightvision.com. Also want to say a very large thank you to the team over at 100 Concepts. And these guys, you know, they caught on about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and have not slowed down since. Custom Night Vision is a fan. Oh, if I can just slow my roll for a second here, you guys. Wow. Too much caffeine and It's hitting me hard. It's hitting me hard. So let's start this over again here. 100 concepts. All right. So they hit the scene a year and a half, 2 years ago, and they have not slowed down. I need to slow down. 100 Concepts makes some outstanding products like their light caps, scope caps, and beyond just the whole cap idea, which some people really, really like. Some people really don't for a couple different reasons. Some people like it more now because 100 Concepts listens to their customers. They came out with a ruggedized light cap that was quieter. They adapted their design to make it fit with their end users, the operational folks needed to be more successful in the field. So whether you're looking for their hex caps or their pro cap series that kind of blends that scope cap and hex cap idea with a kill flash, right? Blends those together into a very, very usable combination. Or you need something like some pack scrim. They have a chem light kit, their sling hook to save your neck on those long rucks. 100 Concepts makes some outstanding products. The website is 100concepts.com. Jonah, Garrett, and Pierce, those guys, they do some great work. You guys are supporting some just wonderful people and an amazing small business. 100concepts.com. Jeez. Okay. If I just hold it together a little bit longer here, I want to say thank you to our partners at RMA Armor. You guys, their website is rmadefense.com. So if you are looking to get into armor plates, and I know a lot of people have questions about this when they are first inquiring, they're looking into, hey, I want to get a plate carrier because I don't just want a chest rig. I want to get armor. I want to buy it from a reputable company. I don't want to have to deal with any, you know, shady manufacturing sources and things like that. That is where RMA comes in. Okay. RMADefense.com discount code PreparedMindset5 is going to save you guys 5% off on your order. And a little bit comes back to support the Prepared Mindset podcast. They still, I believe, have a 30% off sale going at the time of this recording, coming off the Labor Day weekend, for their level 4 plates. So a little bit heavier, but the top end of what we're able to get you guys in terms of ballistic protection. And it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg like some of these companies out here charging you, you know, $2,000, $2,400 for a set of plates. Not over RMA. Again, rmadefense.com, discount code PreparedMindset5. It's going to save you a little bit of dough, and it is going to make sure that you and yours are well protected against, God, whatever may come around the corner in the next few months here. So, now that I made it through that, with only one major catastrophe, right? Thank you to all of our supporters, our sponsors, our partners, right, in the industry that make this podcast possible as we continue to chug along and bring out fresh content like this to you guys on a week-to-week basis, sometimes more often. You know, if you guys aren't aware, we do release Sunday sit reps at the beginning of every month, sometimes more often if there's something crazy that goes on in the world, like, I don't know, somebody taking a shot at a former president in Pennsylvania. We had an impromptu sit rep for that, but those key partnerships are what keep us rolling here, and they are absolutely essential. But like I said, we were customers of all those companies before we were ever partners with them, and it's a really, really cool to have personal relationships with all these folks, but even cooler that we can share them confidently with all of you, because if you're on this journey, if you're going down this road the same that we are or we have, we know how scary it can be sometimes when you're putting out a huge chunk of change for something like armor or something like night vision, and you want to know that you want to have a good, positive buying experience with a product you don't have to worry about, and that's what those guys are here for. Go check out Custom. Go check out 100 Concepts. Go check out RMA Armor if you haven't already, you guys. They'll take great care of you. Let them know that Prepared Mindset sent you over. But like I was saying, we're talking philosophy this week with Randy, and you know, some people like to poo-poo on this discussion. I remember I want to say we did an episode, I mean, years back, right? I think I titled it Mindset Matters or something, talking about, or maybe it was an Instagram post, I don't know for sure. We're talking about mindset, and to me, mindset and philosophy are tied together at the hip, right? Your philosophy will drive and strengthen your mindset. If you have a weak philosophy behind what you're doing and why you're doing it and how you do it and how you improve it, your mindset will match that. I 110% believe that. And I remember I got a response from, at the time, I believe they were a subscriber at the time, maybe not, I don't know, coming back saying that mindset doesn't matter. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. All that matters is your training and your overall personal ability and capability. And I found that to be very, very funny because, yeah, your training and your capability and your overall effectiveness are hugely important to whether you're going to be successful in a confrontation or a gunfight or hand-to-hand combat, whatever, right? But the aggressiveness, the attitude, all the things that you carry internally with you into those moments and situations, we have a word for that. It's mindset. So, you know, funny to me how shallow some people's thinking can be, when they're just looking for a way to be critical. But these discussions here that we have with folks around philosophy, sometimes they get really deep. Sometimes it's a very uplifting thing, where you can talk about helping people nurture and grow that seed, of desire and passion and self-improvement within them. Sometimes it takes a very critical turn where we look at the community at large right now. We have some folks that aren't really interested in building up their fellow man. They talk about these things a lot, and they talk about the value of their philosophy, but they aren't there to improve those around them, because their main motivator is money. So, hey, I could teach you how to be the baddest motherfucker on the planet if you pay one installment payment of, I don't know, $599.95 and travel to whatever state where you can attend my seminar or class or, you know, whatever have you, right? So it goes some different ways in this community when you try to have these discussions around philosophy. Regardless of which direction it takes, I think these are probably some of the most telling discussions and the most important ones because we're always changing. We're constantly changing. We're evolving in, and I hate using the word tactical, but within the tactical realm, within the tactical space, the people who are really about this shit, they're always searching and looking for that next better way, the best way, if such a thing even exists, right, to accomplish their goals. That in itself is a personal philosophy, that you're never satisfied and that you're never married to a single idea. It's this beautiful combination of just desire and passion, and will and energy, and this overall just this pursuit, right, of wanting to be better and to do more for yourself and seriously for those around you, whether those are teammates, and that's, by the way, that's not exclusive to the military, law enforcement. A lot of us train in groups. We train with the same 3, 4, you know, 7 friends. That's your team. Okay. So whether those are the people you're talking about that are around you, or maybe the people around you are your family, are your loved ones, and they're what drives you to do more and to do better for yourself and to, you know, invest the money in things like training, to invest the money into gear and the time, you know, away from them to make yourself better and more capable. And all good things, you know, as all good things should be, right? It's a balance. You know, I don't ever advocate for taking time and money away from your family, at least within reason, right? I think everybody should be knowledgeable and capable, but if this is where you're spending all of your money and then things like a birthday, anniversary, the opportunity for vacations, all those, like those things all get pushed away to the side because you're putting every cent and more than what you can afford into this, I think you're doing things wrong. And maybe that's equally telling in terms of what your personal philosophy is, and maybe even a way you can address it to be a better man. Like, I think when we get into the philosophical side of things, it's just as much about being a good man as it is about being a good operator. And please, you guys, don't throw anything at me, you know, for using the word operator, but I'm just trying to articulate the point that I think we all strive to improve ourselves. I think we all yearn to be in a better position than we sit at this very moment, right? And that kind of tunnel vision can be a powerful thing, for both good and bad. So again, all of that to say that the kind of discussions we're having here this week on this episode, right, with Randy in this particular instance, these are powerful opportunities for us as individuals to talk to some folks who have done the things that we ourselves are training to try to do, and understand and grow from their successes and from certainly their failures, if you know they're still with us to share them, on how we can do that better and some of the pros, cons, and everything in between. So it really, this should be an outstanding discussion. I've been looking forward to it since, honestly, since I had Randy on the first time, and we were even just talking after we finished recording then, hey, you know, this was great. I'd love to do a follow-up around, like, more specifically the philosophy piece to it and everything. So we're both pretty, you know, happy to bring this back together. We were able to find some time on the calendar where it made sense for both of us. And, here we are. So we're going to put this together. We're going to bring this one to you guys. And I guess that's really it. So, here we go, folks. Check it out. Welcome back to the podcast, sir. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks a lot, Austin. Good to see you again, and good to follow up after our first one.
Yeah, likewise. I look back, and it's actually been, we're not quite there, but we're almost 2 months, which it does not feel like. Right, it does not feel like it's been 2 months.
Yeah, the summer flew by.
Yeah, unfortunately, definitely the case. But that's always the way it goes, right? And after our last discussion, which was great, anybody listening, you guys, I believe it was mid-July, if you want to rewind and go check out that discussion. Very, very good talk. But you and I, sir, we spoke a little bit after recording last time and wanted to set up this follow-on discussion around more specifically, and we got into some elements, I think, in the last talk we had, but specifically getting your perspective on what I will call like training philosophy, which it rolls in a whole bunch of different elements, which is part of what makes this a really cool topic, because you're kind of unrestrained in where we take it. Mm-hmm. But it's, I think, for anybody listening, right, who is really seriously trying to find ways beyond just like, what's the best drill on the flat range, like that wants to grow, that wants to expand, this is the kind of discussion and the kind of thing where, like, this is where the value is, because right. I think, and I'd love to hear your take. I think that if you have that determination, that passion, that energy, you know, the mindset, just all of it, right? That'll take you so much further than the gear, obviously, yeah. than the right, or I guess the, you know, air quotes here, the best drills on the flat range, or, you know, all the other stuff. But like knowing, and so maybe then I'll just back it up a second and start there. Sure. When I say training philosophy to you, what is to you, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a few different philosophies that I try to implement with specific to firearms training, and the training philosophy, really the foundation is why. Like, why we start with, why are we training this specific drill or this specific way? What is it that we're trying to achieve? It's not, you know, certainly not trying to simplify anything, but oftentimes people want to get faster. So speed and accuracy are the two things that people want to improve upon. The philosophy of a way to get there is to look at training like it's a process. It doesn't happen in one session. It doesn't happen in one outing. It happens over time, and where the true growth truly happens is on the front end of training and then on the back end of training. So my philosophy is, when we train, time is precious, you know, ammunition is expensive. So when we train, we want to train with purpose. So we don't waste time. We don't waste rounds. Everything has a very specific reason why we're doing it a specific way. So the philosophy is essentially start with why, and then when we do step onto the range, train with purpose and try real hard not to waste time or money, really. Because I mean, there's a lot of benefits to dry fire for sure, where it's not going to cost you anything other than time, mm-hmm. which will benefit the shooter. But the philosophy, I would say wholeheartedly, is, you know, start with why. It's not about the kit. Yeah, there's certain pieces of kit and equipment that will help for sure, but that's not going to be the difference between somebody who's a high level shooter and somebody that's a, you know, a hobbyist that just wants to plunk around, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But guys that really want to get better, you know, and they are serious about their training, if you ask them, you know, stepping out to the range today, what are you working on? They'll probably have an answer for you. But if folks just say, oh, I'm just going to go punch holes in paper, you know, your training is going to plateau and you're really not going to get, you know, faster or if it, essentially more accurate.
Yeah. And that's something that I've observed as well with, I mean, friends, people in classes and things, but a lot of the time it's the simple, and you even said you don't want to oversimplify it, but sometimes the right answer is the simplest one. You know, and I used to teach music. I think we talked about that briefly the last time we spoke, but I used to make that joke to kids all the time. Like, you guys want to know the secret sauce? Like, you want to know how you're going to get better, like, really quick? it's time and practice. You can't do it quickly. You have to just invest the time. And unfortunately, I think in our community, in our space, I think there is a misconception. I not even I think, I know there is, that you through those outside influences, those outside elements like the gear and things like that, people think that you're just gonna magically like that ability is just gonna matriculate itself like into your person, right? You're, oh, I only shoot bad because I have a hollow sun versus an aim point, or and it's like no, you need to spend time like understanding is a huge part, I think. Like you said, why am I here? And then take it a step further, and how am I going to fix this? And if you don't know, that's fine. But then again, what's the next question is, who's going to help me? How can I fix this if I can't figure it out myself? You know what I mean?
There's so many aspects of shooting fast and accurate that we can focus on, right? So, like for an example, whether it's a pistol or a long gun, having somebody understand what the gun should feel like in their hand, for somebody that's a tactile learner, that will connect with them. But if we have a visual learner, then the onus is on me as somebody that's trying to help them as an instructor, as a coach, is to connect with how they learn. So, over time, you build rapport with people, you understand what makes them tick, how they like to be pushed. And once we have those key answers or those key questions answered, then the training really it starts to advance quickly. Pistol or long gun, for example, the tactile feel of what pressures we're putting onto the gun when we grip the gun has a lot to do with how we influence the muzzle and how we influence the shot placement. But if somebody is unable to understand or even articulate what it is they're doing or how they feel the gun in their hand, that's where I would start. So rather than just blasting more rounds downrange and ripping through, boatloads of money, it's really honing in on how does the gun feel, how is it responding, what kind of pressures are you putting on the gun, and then really trying to like dial into the way that learner understands. That way, the training practice is way more valuable at it for both the instructor and for the student that's, trying to get better.
Well, and if you don't take that approach, I'll say like that's not to say that you can't get to where you want to go by doing it a different way than what you just described. However, I will share, as somebody who didn't do it that way, it takes a lot longer. You do waste a ton more money, not just in ammo. Like I went from an M&P. And think like, oh yeah, it's just it, this isn't right because I don't like this stupid hinged trigger that they have. To I'll try a Canik because these are great out of the box. The trigger's amazing. And finding out I hated, other things about that platform. And then trying a Glock and going, okay, I'm not gonna spend any more money on this. Like I need to get some actual help from somebody who knows and understands. Like it's not it, it's it, and I sent this to a buddy last week, and he had never heard it, which is funny because it's really old, but it's the Indian, not the arrow, right? Like it's you, it's not what tool you're holding, it's you, and you're not putting enough time in with that specific piece of equipment or that skill set, whatever the case may be, right?
And you could use the same analogy with a carpenter. A really talented carpenter that's going to build a house, they're not going to blame the saw for a miscut. They're going to know that, it was the operator misjudgment and error on measurement that caused the miscut. Right. So that would be a carpenter's analogy. Somebody that blames the tools, not necessarily the highest quality of carpenter. How do you get there? It's through making mistakes. So another training philosophy is I would encourage folks to try things out. And what I share with folks oftentimes is, man, I'm going to share a way. It's not the only way. It's just a way that we're going to, let the focus point be for today's training. Try it out. And if it works for you, and great, adopt it. If it doesn't, then we'll find something else that does, because there's multiple different ways to skin the cat. But for folks that really get hung up on, the specific platform or the tool that they're using, those folks tend to be, not always, generally speaking, but those folks tend to take a lot longer to get to where they want to be because they're constantly chasing problems that are not there, blaming the gun, blaming the sight, blaming, whatever it might be. When really, if we apply solid fundamentals, we can put literally any platform in our hand and still get the desired effect.
Well, And even Pat, I'll take that a step further. I'll even say that I think people sometimes need to give themselves a little bit more leeway, you know, with the process and just understanding it's very fluid, and organic when we're talking about individual growth. We like everything you just talked about, like, is super critical. And you can do all of those things. You can see that marked improvement, and it can still not get that individual to where they think they should be or want to be or need to be. It's additional time. And I think at some point, right, the onus, we're kind of talking about it, where the onus of this is kind of on the instructor to help identify how to best help this individual learn, right? And at some point, you as the student, then I'll say, you have to take that. You have to take it, carry it, run with it, and ask yourself, how far am I willing to carry this? Like, what is my personal standard or performance metric? Like, how willing am I to accept, I don't want to say mediocrity, but like, where's your standard? You know, I'm sure that you've seen that a lot with training, you know, civilian or law enforcement, which, and it's not to rip on law enforcement, but then you also compare to what I'm sure you experienced with your military time, and those are different standards. It's because you're at two different places, you're put two different amounts of time and focus, and it's different. And it's up to the individual how far they want to take that.
I agree with you, and the only like reservation or addition that I would add to that is there's a little bit on the instructor to connect with the student, but there's a little bit of this on the student to take ownership of their own learning. In other words, they may have their own KPIs or their own key performance indicators that they've set for themselves, whatever that standard might be, which is fine. But there's a process to get there. And sometimes I agree with you, the student may be a little bit hard on themselves, or they're expecting, really great things in short amount of time. So as an instructor providing some sort of instruction, understanding that about the human, like the human factor is a matter of fact. It is a thing that needs to be addressed. Like, how does this person learn? What expectations are they putting on themselves? What expectations do they have for me as an instructor? That way we have synergy and we can actually communicate with each other. And that way the student will grow. And with that, being realistic with standards is important. Without a standard, we're just going through the motions. So whether that's a
Right.
standard of time or that's a standard of movement. Whatever that standard is, whether it's a distance thing or a speed thing, keeping those standards achievable so they're not ridiculous, but reasonable and achievable is important as well. We won't necessarily know that in the first session what the person is capable of. If we got 3 hours on the range versus 7 hours on the range is very different. You're going to have a series of skills and drills that will assess what this person's relative standard is. And then from there, that's when the true growth will happen, because the only way we can push somebody is at the edge of that, discomfort zone. That's where they start to grow, is when they're being pushed outside of their zone of comfort. But brand new student, brand new instructor, that synergy of relationship building, that takes time. It takes time, and it takes, open-ended questions. How the learner learns, that's important for the instructor to know. But where I'm going with that is, there's a little bit on the instructor, but there's also a little bit on the student to want to learn and be open to, suggestive change.
Yeah, no, that's yeah, you nailed it. I think at least I can say from what I've experienced on the civilian side of things is it's always funny when you watch these people and they pay money to take a class or they drive hours to get to an instructor or something, and then they want seemingly, and I'm sure they probably don't walk into it this way, but whether they realize it or not, it's like they question everything. And not in like the explain this to me because I don't understand way. They question it like, I don't think this is right. I don't want to do it this way. They're very closed off in what they're willing to do or to change, right? Like, handgun grip is a great example, because I've been in a couple classes where you get these older folks, you know, and I've been shooting this way 20 years. You're not going to convince me to change. It's like, well, okay, so A, what the hell are you doing here? If not to find out how to be better, but B, what do you not see that you showed up here for a reason? which I assume is the output of your shooting and performance, you want to get better, try something different. Like
Yes.
it, I mean, if nothing else, you'll find out a way that doesn't work, and then you can continue down that path. I just don't understand the folks that think they have it 100% figured out at any point
Yeah.
in your, like, there are guys who are great competitive shooters, just amazing guys. They can, you know, they crush it with the reloads and accuracy and everything, and they're still looking for somebody to tell them where they're wrong. And they're
Yeah.
some of the best in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those high achievers, you know, they're striving for that 1% improvement. You know, they're polishing the skills just a little bit more. Every time they do, you know, any type of training with anybody new, they're open-minded to maybe I'll pick something up, you know, on this particular seminar, which is a great attitude. We call that the white belt attitude, where there's always space to learn. There's always space to evolve and develop and maybe even try something new. I truly believe the learning has no finish line. There's always something that we can get a little bit faster, more efficient, improvement. There's improment to be had. We're open to that. But if we get into a rut, or not even a rut, just a staggering plateau, that's where I would challenge the student. Is it you're at a plateau because you are now convinced that you have no more learning? Or are you at a plateau because you're not open to trying something different or applying another technique that may have the same desired effect? You may still get the exact same result, but maybe you're a little bit faster, a little bit smoother. At the end of the day, though, as an instructor onto a student, I put a lot of emphasis and pride into explaining why. So here's the way I do it, and here's why. Here's the reason that we put our hand like this. Here's the reason that we put pressure on the pistol like this. These are the reasons why. And if you can connect with the why, oftentimes people are a little bit more open to that, you know, trying that technique or that thing.
Yeah, and you know, no, and most instructors I've ever dealt with, right? Whether it's a conversation here on this podcast or a classroom, you know, experience I've had, most of them have said, and I think you just said it a moment ago, even like, this isn't the best way. This is my way. This is how I know how to make this work. As a student, you should be searching for the right combination of those elements to make you more effective and more capable, right? So maybe it doesn't work, you know, one way doesn't work well for you, but the other one does. Okay, cool. Then you just figured out the right combination. And it is always very frustrating, at least when I'm training. Like, we do weekly CQB practice sessions at a facility here. You know, it's about 40 minutes from where I live. And we have some individuals that show up that have prior military experience, but they didn't go, they don't, they have not been through the training that we've been through, a couple classes that we took, like a core group of us. Just for some background, dude rolls in. Hey, I'm former military. You know, I've got this experience. So comes in and is just like against the grain on everything. Never asking the question like, hey, why are you guys nonverbal here but verbal here? You know, what are you? You know, why do you signal this way versus this way? Do you guys do, you know, simultaneous clearing, right? You know, rooms on opposite sides of the hallway. Like, it's never that. It's always, okay, well, this, you know, this has me all jacked up. So you guys need to change your SOPs to match what I can understand. And it's like, well, why don't you try running it our way? Why don't you try seeing what we do? Or maybe just asking a damn question, hey, why do you do it this way? We can articulate it. We've been doing it for a while here, so we can explain this back to you. And these guys also have military experience, by the way, that, you know, they're bringing to the table. So I the closed off thing, it's the it kills attitude if you're in a group training. Like, it kills
Sure.
attitude, and you're not going to go anywhere with it.
No, I couldn't agree more. And that ego, you know, we all have an ego, every one of us. Anybody that says they don't, they're, you know, they're blind. We all do. It's whether or not we choose to manage it and kind of tame it. When things don't make sense, I encourage guys, challenge something if it doesn't make sense, but ask the question rather than telling. You know, ask like, hey, well, just like you said, why are you doing it this way? And if it makes sense, try it. But if it doesn't make sense, maybe you just need a little bit more clarification or a little bit more of an answer, but at least be open to asking those questions. Where sometimes, man, the ego gets the best of people, and that's why they plateau. That's why they hit a level where they're just kind of, they're not leveling up. They're just sustaining what they've learned based on past experiences. Now, don't get me wrong, like past experiences, they definitely, you know, have a they are a factor to consider on why certain things are done or a reason behind a technique that is being applied. But let's be honest, man, what happened 10 years ago is a little bit different than what's happening right now. So,
Oh, yeah.
it's important that we continue to evolve, and it doesn't have to be massive changes, but subtle incremental nuances on, a specific way to reload a magazine, or a way to, like, from a CQB's perspective, is think of it like, instead of cutting corners, like how to round a corner, how to, get to the desired effect a little bit sooner by, anticipating what may happen. That's, a little bit of CQB, IQ, but also firearm manipulation. Like, had we had the gun properly mounted in the shoulder before we made entry, that could be the difference between a second and a half or a missed shot altogether. And those little nuances, those little intricacies, to me, what separates a professional from an amateur is the amateur already knows. They already know where they went wrong. They just need to polish it up and get a few more reps in. An amateur may not even be aware of what they're doing incorrectly or how they could do it better. So the way I would wrap this up, and from a like an ego perspective, is if we all just apply a bit of a white belt mentality, you're not only are you going to improve, you're going to be so much more enjoyable to be around because you're open to change and you're open to getting better. But
Yeah.
if people come in with a pre-stage mindset of, well, this is the way I've done it for the last 10 years, this is the way I'm always going to do it, everybody's on their own journey, and I wouldn't beat my head too much on around trying to convince somebody. It's just like, hey man, be willing to try it or don't. It's your training. So at the end of the day, you have the option to try something new and get a little bit better, or keep doing what you're doing and leave the same way that you came in. Over to you.
Yeah, I mean it well, and it's if you look at the age range we see of a lot of fighting age males, I'll say, right?
Sure.
Anywhere from 21 to 45, 50, maybe a little older, right? You know, I mean, we were all alive for the most part, right? to see what happened with the war on terror and how that progressed in different ways and things. And I specifically mention that because up until that point, at least here in the US, we very much had adopted a like maintenance policy on a lot of tactics, a lot of training. It was very much like, and you hear guys in other discussions and books and things talk about like pre-GWAT military was like, oh, we're worried about shining boots and we're worried about starching pants and you know, training was just it was very stagnant. And just we're maintaining, right? We're not worried about going forward. We just want to keep the status quo to unfortunately then going through everything that we went through in that war, right? And finding out that, hey, we can't do this. We need to always be looking for a newer, better way because it's not like, hey, this group of guys goes out and does this thing, figure out a newer, better way to do it, and then snap your fingers, everybody knows. Now she's going to send out a company-wide email that fixes that. It takes years and decades to disseminate this as a best practice through, you know, general military ranks and things like that. And the ramifications of that are far-reaching and very impactful. So seeing that illustrated in such a powerful way, why more people can't associate that when they talk about the development of a better fighter to themselves is that's like a it's such a critical miss that I wonder how people don't kind of relate the two.
Well, I it makes sense to me because, I read, I was doing some organizational behavioral studies a few years ago, and I read this one article with a document that I was involved with, and it suggested that for an institution to make a change, so picture you and I are coming up with, some technique or tactic that we're thinking about implementing. There's a reason why it started. We drill it, we rep it out, we have a pretty strong hand on, why we think this should be implemented. It takes a decade in some cases for change to take effect in an institution. So, knowing that about ourselves, how difficult it is to change something about ourselves. So if we are resistant to change, which a lot of humans are, because it makes them feel uncomfortable, and there's a lot of uncertainty that comes with change.
Right.
So if we're not constantly, attempting to validate and basically like justify or challenge the material, then the change is going to take even longer. So I wouldn't suggest for a second making a change just for the sake of changing, but it's got to make sense to, what is it that we're seeing most common today? What is it that we potentially could see 5 years from now? Well, we better get on top of it now because it's going to take quite a time, to get everybody on the same page and ensuring that we're operating the same way. So I think if people understood more about themselves, whether or not they're legitimately being honest with themselves and saying, yeah, I'm willing to try something different, versus someone who hesitantly says, well, I'll give it a whirl, but I'm pretty convinced I'm going to do it my way anyway. There's going to be constant friction, right? It's going to take a lot longer than it needs to for that positive change to take effect. So, I guess in the long and short of it is be open to what it is that we're choosing to be there, right? So we may as well be open to whatever the instructor is providing for
Oh,
us and try it.
absolutely.
Try it. There's absolutely nothing wrong with challenging the material, doing it in a professional, respectful manner, of course, but there's nothing wrong with challenging the material until you understand why you're doing it, and then give it a legitimate run. Like give it an honest, validated run before you make a quick decision or criticize it too quickly.
Yeah, and just because you do take a specific if you're a police officer, right, an in-service training with a company that is brought in, or as a civilian with a training company. And I've said this before, and it's always very interesting, because people will say they'll take like a class, right? And they'll have like a handful of things that they love, and they'll have one or two things that they really disagree with the instructor, and they're like, well, that was a crap class. It's like, no, it's not. Look at all the things you just said you agreed with him on, or her, because it could be a lady, right? And
For sure.
you didn't like how they told you to index your mag for a reload or something, or they told you to keep the gun, in your shoulder pocket when you're doing your rifle reloads versus breaking it down, and you disagree. Cool, but that's like one thing, man. Like, look at everything else that you liked, that you even bought. Like, I've had people tell me with their own words, I realized I was doing this wrong, or I got better just by whatever, I don't know, exercise they had built into the curriculum. But you're going to say that you wouldn't recommend this course because of one thing that instructor did. Not to say that that's not possible, because if that one thing was egregiously unsafe or something, then like, okay, then,
That's the
you know what I
thing,
mean? But hey, I don't like how they, you know what I mean? It's such a small thing. Like, then reload the rifle the way you like, take the rest of it, run with it. You
Sure.
can take a class, you can agree with 70 or 80%, disagree with 20 to 30%. Still, it's a good class, and you still walk away all the better for it.
And that's a great example of someone who's open-minded versus someone who's got a fixed kind of mindset on the way things are going. But for someone to do a 2-day course, for example, and suggest that they took nothing away from it, and I would throw up a red flag on that. I was like, you mean in 2 days you never took anything away from that? Nope, this guy was completely junk. I'd be like, is it the instructor or is it the accountability of what it is that you want to achieve as a student with a growth mindset? There's a little give and take there. So it's a good example. I was sitting with a friend of mine a few years ago, listening to at a strength and conditioning symposium, and listen to this guest speaker. He was on the stage for about 45 minutes, giving a dynamite briefing on, tactical athletic development. Talking about triple extension, ankles, hips, and knees, how they're all connected. It was a great brief. A ton of information, a ton of great knowledge, gained. And she elbows me at one point, and she's looking up at his PowerPoint that had, so basically he had a screen in the background, and then he was speaking freely on the stage, and she highlights some like spelling mistake or grammatical issue, and I'm like, really? Of all the things that you want to highlight, that's the thing. Like you're gonna focus on that thing. I'm like, I'm not even paying attention to that. This guy's got me so like I'm all in listening to him present, and you give me an elbow to point out a grammatical issue on his PowerPoint. Like, come on, man. Like it's things like that. Focusing on the stuff that does not matter versus the stuff
Right.
that does matter makes us better.
And if that's not how you absorb information well, like, maybe seminars are probably not the way you should. I mean, and there's only so many options. Like, sometimes you're just kind of shit out of luck. Like, and I with people like that, I do wonder, because I've been through those situations as well, right? Whether it's a meeting for work, or like the safety brief for a class, and they say the wrong word. You know what they're saying, but People misspeak, it happens, whatever. And I do wonder sometimes with people, like, are you looking for a reason to not like what's going on here?
Sure.
Are you looking for ways to get better today, or are you looking for reasons to discount why you're here?
Yeah.
And I think the latter is probably one of the most toxic things that you can carry with yourself. Like, if you don't want to go, like, just don't go unless you have to for work. I get sometimes, but like, I think as a community struggle with battling confirmation bias. And I think that's where so much of that stuff comes from, especially when we're talking training. But it could also be just, I mean, it could be anything in the medical field. Certainly there are different perceptions on different things, and hey, this is how you rehab and recover. Or it could be combatives, right? It could be anything. People come in with, I know this, so I'm looking for somebody else who's going to confirm to me that what I believe is true. Which is especially worse, I think, in the shooting space, when you have guys that go take like 3, 5, 7 classes from a company, right? That have maybe had they have a large curriculum, and then they go to a different company and they teach something different, because maybe those guys were Army and these guys were Marines, so it's not exactly the same karate, right?
Sure.
And they get upset because it's not the same as what they know, and they've invested all that money in those 5 or 7 classes. It's like, well, dude, you're just learning more. Do what you want to do. Don't like I think confirmation bias is one of the biggest killers, and like, especially if you're looking for ways to get better, because you might find that you do it way better this other way, just for whatever reason, and
I
you're
agree with you. Confirmation bias is a thing for sure. And one of the things I share with folks that come on courses with me is like, if you're already doing something, you're doing it really well. And most importantly, if you're safe, then what I'm sharing with you, to take it or leave it, either bolt it on to what you're already doing to make it a little bit more efficient. Or if it's not connecting with you, because we all move a little bit differently physically, right? So if there's a physicality limitation, no problem. But if there's a learning roadblock that is self-induced, that as an instructor, that's the most challenging, but also the most rewarding student to try to connect with. And that's to try to figure out what it is that's going to make this guy tick, and then how can I get him there? It's not a necessarily I want to convince him to do it my way. That's not it. I want him to see that he's going to get even better. He's going to tap into more of his potential. And when he leaves this, one day, 2 day, 3 day course, whatever it might be, there's going to be something that he's left with that at the end of the day makes him better. And from the law enforcement perspective, I, with every core of my being, I care about their safety. So I'm very cautious with what I say and the words I choose, and also the actions that I'm putting forward, because that could be the difference between life or death. For a civilian that is interested in doing some training, they want to do some cool guy stuff, man, I'm already supporting you because you want to do this stuff. Like, I'm already on board because I think it's great that you want to do this. But I'll also keep it within relevant context to the realities of where are you going to be using this for real on the average, right? If it's a civilian, like, you want to get better,
Sure.
you want to scratch that tactical itch, man, I respect that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But the why is so important. With law enforcement or military folks, where life is literally the difference, where sports shooting, the consequences are very, very different. Yes, the act of shooting is the same. The act of, manipulating the firearm and being quick and accurate, that's the same. But the consequences and the human factor of actually pulling the trigger is very, very different.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like the thought of that right there, like, what does this mean to you, the individual? Like, is it life-saving skill? And I guess you can also say it could be one and the same in the right context, like if you're a responsibly
Context
armed
is everything.
civilian.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But there is certainly, I think, a lot of value in what you just said there, where if you are, I will say, if you're a civilian that's looking to get better, and you're very adamantly married to a certain way of doing something to the point of like just being, I'll just say it, like just being an asshole about it, I do start to question why. Like, is it, and I'd actually love to hear in your experience training on both sides of the realm, right? Like, how often when people say, I just like to do it this way because I'm better at it, when they is how often is that actually the case, and how often is it they've just never tried anything else and worked on it?
Yeah, I would say those situations present themselves not very often, once in a blue moon, where those words have actually been used. I just like it this way. I like to do it this way. Okay, no problem. And I'll challenge it, obviously in a respectful manner. Like, why? What do you know why you do it that way? And is there another way that you could do it? And if there is, are you open to trying this other method or technique? And if they're like, no, I just like to do it this way, I'm like, okay, keep doing what you're doing, no problem. At the end of the day, this is your training. I'm here to provide training for you. It would be so much more beneficial for both of us and way more entertaining and enjoyable if you were just open to trying something different. And then, after 4 or 5 mags worth of doing it this way, and you're still convinced by the fact that we fall victim to a confirmation bias, then you're gonna walk away doing it your way anyway. But at least you've tried something different, and now you have a new tool in the toolbox. Choose to use it at a later date if you want or not. Totally up to you. But yeah, it's happened a little bit. Not it doesn't happen a lot, luckily.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I'd be surprised if that was not the case, because, well, at least when I encounter it, it's usually like at the range with friends, or you run into people at the range and they're closed-minded. They don't want to. If you're gonna invest the money, I would at least hope you would have that willingness to hear somebody else tell you something, and it's maybe dependent on. Maybe the context of the class. And what I mean specifically, like, I've been to, and I had this conversation with Blake Flannery when he was on recently. The students that pay $100 or $200 for a class, and then the guys that'll pay six, seven, $800 for a class. And this, it's not to put like a financial qualifier, right, on are you serious about getting better or not? Because I did the economy sucks. Like, I get it. And I totally understand budgeting. I have a wife that likes nice things too. Like, I get it. But like, the people that only take the $100 classes and like, hey, I've taken 10 of these, versus maybe people that have got three or four classes that are the $600, like where they are mentally. Are you really looking for growth? Are you really looking to have somebody poke holes in your capability as a shooter, whatever, or are you just looking to rack up a resume so you can say, I've done this many classes, I am now at this, whatever, this imaginary level of proficiency, right? And it's very puzzling to me when you find those people that are like, I've taken $1,000 classes. I'm like, all right, so what'd you get for that? And it's the res mixed results usually.
Oftentimes people will take these courses with, a motivating factor of, and it's legitimate. It makes total sense. What's in it for me? They're going to invest time, they're going to invest money, they want to know what they're going to get out of it. I find it's interesting where the folks, when I ask them, like, what are you hoping to achieve in this next 2 days or 3 days? I find it really interesting when folks are, they kind of shrug their shoulders and like, I'm just an open book, man. I'm here to learn. I just, whatever you throw at me, I'm open. I'm like, okay, so super open-minded. But they don't really have a directed goal on what they're hoping to achieve, right? They're just coming in and whatever I throw at them, they're open to trying it, which is, it's awesome. It's a pleasure, but I find it interesting. And then there's other folks all ask the same question. Hey man, what are you hoping to achieve in these 2, 3 days or whatever we're together? And they have very detailed interests, right? I really like asking that question because now I have an idea of what that person is motivated by. So if the curriculum, if I, for example, if they gave me a specific answer and it's not in the curriculum, I will go out of my way to find somewhere in the schedule in the curriculum to fit it in to ensure that that person gets what they need and what they want. Because it's great when people come in with a detailed, very directed goal. Like I want to get better at reloads or whatever it might be. Okay, no problem. Or if it's a CQB specific, I really want to understand how to, not overexpose my barrel at the threshold. Okay, man, we'll make sure that this is covered if it's not already in the curriculum, but it's interesting when people and love them. They're awesome. They're always in a pleasure to have, on the mat or on the range together. It's like, hey man, I'm just an open book. I'm here to learn. Like, great. It's going to be enjoyable.
Well, and I would almost like I and I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've been in classes where that's how you start. Like, everybody just go around a big circle. Tell us, a little bit about yourself and what you're here to learn. And I think that that is a, while it's a cool answer, I would say it's probably one of the less acceptable ones, because to me, and this is just me as an observer, right? It sends the message of I haven't thought about it, or I don't think about my training in a detailed enough way to really understand yet, which it's not inherently a bad thing, but I would almost challenge those individuals and like, well, what specifically? Like, give me something specific that like you had to have been thinking about this class. Like, you signed up, a month and a half ago. What is something you want to take away from this? For instance, not this coming weekend, the weekend after, I'm going to a weekend charity event, taking a two-man structure clearance course. Like, it's an abbreviated one, albeit everything I've done previously has been groups of four. So I'm very interested. And if Jared, the instructor, asks me what I'm here for, I would say, I really want to understand what you're gaining and what you're giving up in the context of two people solving problems versus four, because it shifts everything very drastically. Like, I
Sure
would
does.
have that thought in mind, and knowing that I want to deepen my understanding of some of those skill sets. The I'm just an open book here to learn. Like, I think that honestly, I do sometimes feel like people are just a little bit intimidated by the question. They don't want to sound dumb to people in class.
Oh, 100%. And some
Usually not
people
the
don't
case.
like public speaking. And some people don't like
True.
to, to be singled out. And I respect that. I don't harp on it. And through the duration of the training, I'll get to know them. I'll make time to get to know them personally and then really find out what they're interested in. Maybe, in an open setting, you're right. They don't want to embarrass themselves. They're not really sure what questions to ask, or maybe legitimately they haven't put enough thought into it to know what detail specifically that they're interested in. And then throughout the week or throughout the duration of the training, then it'll become highlighted, and then that will become their focus. And I'll literally say that to them, like, for the next hour, I just want you to focus on this, because this is the one area that if you polish this up, your shooting is going to go through the roof, right? Your level of growth is going to incrementally, or excuse me, exponentially climb. Just focus on this one thing, because after watching you for, last little while, for me as a coach, as instructor, here's what I've identified as a point that would be beneficial for you to focus on. Now I've just given them a new goal. Maybe they didn't have that leading into it, but the onus is on me as instructor to give that to them. Hey man, think about this for your next, hour of training. Focus on this one thing. And I'm like, oh, great, man. Awesome. Or they're like, okay, sure. But maybe it goes in one ear right out the other, but I'll at least make an attempt, several attempts.
So let me ask you this: with your experience and background, when you were in the military, your time with the organization you were with, were there best practices or like a general approach to like flat range days or training sessions? Like, how granular did you all get with, hey, we're hitting the range today and we're just going to work on reloads? Or was it more than that? Was that, I mean, because I'm assuming, and I and could be wrong, right? Some of this was like self-directed study. Like, hey, you've made it to this level. Some of this shit you're just gonna have to take care of on your own, but we're gonna plan our training and our focus and focus our training on these things every time we step out, things like that.
Yeah, it's a great question. The guys that I work with at JTF2 were, very high performers and guys that wanted to get better all of the time. So typically, if we were doing a standard flat range, for example, somebody who was identified to run the range would come up with the range practice. He would probably ask a few of the guys, like, hey man, what are you interested in working on tomorrow? We're on the range or whatever. He might get some feedback from the guys, or there might have been something over the last little while that came to the surface, and that will be the focus of the range. So that's one way I've seen it kind of get knocked out of the park, which is, often really well done, where the guys will come in with a plan, they'll execute the plan. When we show up as, the teammates, for example, this one or two guys, they already have the range set up. They've got the range practice in mind. They brief us, and then we run it. And then generally we have, more of the senior guys would provide coaching and feedback, but not always. In some cases, there's junior guys who were, just dynamite shooters, fast, accurate, smooth, understood. And sometimes they would be put on the spot and be like, hey man, what do you think about this? Or somebody that's got a growth mindset, which most of the guys did, might pull that guy aside and, hey, when I run this next string, just watch what I'm doing and, provide some feedback. So you're literally getting, one-on-one instruction, coaching from guys that you're running and gunning with on a consistent basis. So it keep everybody keeps everybody honest, but also it keeps everybody at the edge of improvement every session. That way, we're not just standing in front of paper punching holes in the paper. There's a reason behind every practice. So I've seen that run out that way. Also, too, like time sometimes, so time constraints may plan for a 2 hour range, and then right before we step on the range, something may come down the pipe where we've got to adjust, and maybe we only have 45 minutes. So it's interesting too, where guys may have a 2 hour training session plan, it gets cut in half or even less than half. Guys will take deductions from what they had planned and then prioritize what's most important, So rather than just focus on pistol, now we're gonna incorporate both pistol and carbine, and we're gonna do a couple of very specific movement drills. Okay, cool, and everybody's on board. But there's no, I guess you would say, what I saw more consistently than not, there was no just show up and we'll see what happens. It was very detailed with a plan of action to be executed on the practice.
Yeah, and that I think is so much, it's more valuable than it gets credit for. Like really in terms of like, and I've done it myself. I've shown up to the range and I'm just like, oh, I'll just figure it out when I get there. And I've also had range sessions where I'm going with buddies. Josh, who's my co-host here, he's usually very good at that kind of thing where he's like, all right, we're gonna work on this. Or we'll talk about it in advance. Hey, let's, last time we were out shooting together, I really sucked at whatever. It could have been, platform transitions, right? But, carbine to pistol or something. Okay, so then we'll talk about it the night before or something. And hey, I saw this video on YouTube of this. Let's try this or something, right? Or we have some basic drills. We'll try it and we'll diagnose, and then you can kind of pivot and go, well, let's try something that breaks it down or something like that. But I think that you have to stay engaged mentally throughout that whole process. And I've seen it with people I've tried helping where they just, you can tell like the lights are on, nobody's home, and they're just like, okay, yeah, thanks. And they go through the motions, and it's like you have to be personally accountable for all of that time. You have
It
to.
is so mentally draining. You're mentally invested with every aspect of shooting if you really want to get good, if you want to become a really proficient, effective shooter. Each element of movement needs conscious thought. When we shoot a gun, for example, the easiest part of shooting a gun is pulling the trigger. But there's all the other nuances that get us into a position safely to obviously pull the trigger accurately. So if we can break down the training and really focus on, anything with economy of motion and the ergonomics of the way the body moves, any component of that to get us to the end state, which is actually pulling the trigger, sometimes gets overlooked. So when you come in with a detailed training practice, I would suggest for folks, keep it to like two or three techniques max, depending on how much time you have, two or three techniques, but then really polish those two or three techniques, or whatever the training drill is that you're trying to hone in on. Keep it to two or three because it is mentally draining. If you're really focused on each element of the movement pattern, it's mentally draining. Similarly to dry fire training, like I would encourage folks to dry fire. Some people, I get this question a lot. Oh, does it hurt the gun? Is it bad muscle memory? No, it's the
No.
opposite. It's only going to make you better when you do get the time to actually shoot on a live fire range. But again, if you're doing it properly, it will be mentally and physically demanding. Like for me personally, when I do a dry fire session, I put thought into it, 15, 20 minutes max, and I'm done with dry fire. Like I'm really squeezing the gun. I'm really feeling the gun and manipulating the firearm in a manner where I'm thinking about if I was using this for real, how would I be moving? And I try to replicate that in dry fire. That way there's no wasted time, but there's also inefficiency of movement that I'm focused on. So if there's any advice I could give folks out there, have a plan, have a training plan, keep your techniques or your drills to, two to three max. Over to you. You got a bucket full of ammo and you've got endless hours, then, over to you. You can
Sure, go
explore
for
and
it.
do, yeah, go for it. You can do
Yeah.
some experimental training. But me personally, I want every round to count, when I'm on the range, because time is very precious, and bullets are expensive. So got
Yeah.
to make the best of it.
It's funny that some people still overlook the dry fire value. I started a new job in May, so not as much recently, but in my old job, like I would have my headset on for like a conference call that I was just observing on, and I'd have my belt on and working on draw and sight picture or working on reloads with dummy mags and stuff. And none of these things are, I think sometimes when people think dry fire, it needs to be this long convoluted string of like, start here and you're gonna dry fire three targets and then you're gonna run to the other side of your room or your basement while doing a
Yeah.
an emergency reload and engage more. And yes, I think there's value when you do compound exercises like that, dry fire. But I will also always be an advocate for breaking or distilling things down to their most fundamental level and taking the time to work on that. If you're working on a pistol reload, don't do it from a holster. Be it from your extended, ready position, just like if you were in a string of fire and then use your timer, whatever it's on your phone or whatever, to just initiate that reload and just work on that and then build off of those things. I think the crawl, walk, run process is really something that people want to shy away from because it's kind of like that, like you mentioned ego, right? It's acknowledging that you have flaws and weaknesses and things you need to get better on. It's like, holy shit, it's almost kind of like that's the whole reason why we do this so damn much.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you on the dry fire practice. It's beneficial for sure. I would, however, disagree with you on doing dry fire while also engaged mentally in a conference call, because we need to
Oh,
be dialed
I
in.
was not, I can assure you of that. But I would do it during those times.
Yeah, because we want to be deliberately and purposeful about what it is that we're doing. And that's why, it is mentally draining. If you're focused for 10, 15 minutes of legitimate focus, you're going to be tired, and you got a lot of value. We will all get a little bit of value out of dry fire training for sure. And I'm getting what I would like, not for any other reason than my hours are limited. But I
Yeah,
do notice
yeah.
a difference for sure. My consistency is much more notable on the range when I do stay disciplined with dry fire at least once a week. Optimally, it'd be twice a week, but I'm not always as disciplined as I should be.
Well, and it's, for people that are trying to balance the schedule, right? I don't have kids, but I have friends that do, right? So balancing kids and work and time with your wife and it's stuff around the house. Like to your point, 15 minutes. Anybody has 15 minutes in their day.
Agreed.
I'm not gonna believe anyone if they say, I am so busy, I can't find 15 minutes for this, at least, a couple times a week or something. And
I
just,
agree with you.
yeah, just devote that time to that practice. Whatever environment's going to be most helpful, if you need to go find a corner in your basement or something or your garage to get away from stuff where you're not going to be disturbed and interrupted. And I would challenge anyone listening to this. If you don't believe what Randy and I are saying, put a timer on and force yourself to do a complete 15 or 20 minutes of uninterrupted dry practice. You'll look at that clock and it'll be like 6 minutes and you'll have another 14 to go. And you'll be like, how am I not through this yet? Because when you isolate those actions, they're like tenths of seconds or like a couple seconds a piece. It's a lot longer than you think it is. But if done right, you get a lot of
Oh, a
value
ton of
out of it.
training value for sure. And I find sometimes when I've personally when I've invested, I get into a bit of a flow state, and that planned 15 minutes ends up being 45 minutes because I'm in it and I'm working on something, and I lose myself, and I wipe and sweat off my forehead or whatever. And then I look at my watch, but I'm like, whoa, I've been doing this for 45 minutes. Okay, it's probably a good time to wrap it up. But sometimes it just gets so engulfed in it, and I absolutely love it. And there's definitely value added for sure. For sure.
Yeah, it's one of those things I feel like people have to get over like the initial I guess like the initial hump of just doing anything. I feel like our attention spans are so short these days, with technology and whatnot that and I'm guilty of this. I'm really guilty of this. I have to separate myself from my devices when I want to sit down and practice something, when I have a bad range day, reloads or whatever, you know, or a couple of months back, like it was just my sight picture. It was like, I don't know. I kept having to find fish for the dot on my pistol, and it was incredibly frustrating because it's not an issue that I normally had. And then all of a sudden it was. So like set everything else aside, like, you know, put up the baby gates. My dogs can't bother me or anything in the basement, and spend like an hour just working on presentation, just punching out. And it's uncomfortable because I feel like we get that weird, I don't know, it's like a tick, right? You like reach for your cell phone, like, where's my phone? Do I have any messages? Like, you have to separate yourself from all that. It's actually healthy, honestly,
It
but
sure is.
you really need to do it.
Yeah, I agree with you. Any distractions, try to do your best to mitigate them and set yourself up for that successful session, whatever it is on the range, live fire or otherwise. Like, we want to be invested. We want to be all in if we're serious about improving. And you had mentioned something there that triggered a thought too, about a bad range day. I too have days where I'm on the range and I'm focused on something specifically, but it just seems like it's an off day where everything that I attempt to do is just not going according to plan. Everything's it feels clumsy and it's just frustrating. And then we end up sometimes chasing problems that aren't really there. When I recognize these moments, which luckily they don't happen a lot, but they do happen, then a way to kind of ensure that we're still getting something out of that session, what I would recommend to folks is literally take a 5 minute break, grab a sip of water and just kind of shake it out. Maybe even de-kit, like take everything off, just shake it out. And then it's kind of like a physical reset. Take everything off, sit down, have a sip of water. And then when you gear back up and we get ready to do something, focus on one thing, just one thing. That way you leave your training practice on a positive note and it wasn't a complete waste. I found adopting that principle and adopting that kind of philosophy when I've had off days, that way you don't leave the range kind of pissed off and disgruntled about like, man, that was a general waste of time. No, if we don't get ahead of it, it can be. But if we feel like sometimes we're just not getting any better, we're chasing problems that aren't there, just take a moment, take a 5 minute, timer, take the gear off, sip water. And then when we do step back onto the range, focus on one thing and let that be the primary focus for the next half hour or hour, whatever you have left on the range.
And that's tough sometimes. I suck at that. Like I carry that shit with me. When I took it was the Orion Training Group's flexible search course. So it was a 3-day CQB class, like force on paper. Got to the first day, I was like, man, yeah, I feel pretty good. This is good stuff. Yeah. Got to the second day. That was not how I felt. I was super pissed at myself, right? Really upset with it. And that's I'll take the opportunity to say here, that's like where you see the value in surrounding yourself with like good dudes that are able to maybe help you in ways that you're not able to help yourself sometimes, and like just bring you kind of back from it. But you can't, or you shouldn't return to training, to your point, right? Like I absolutely could not show up on day three with a crappy attitude, just super pissed at myself and upset, because you're going to spend more time and energy thinking about that than you will about trying to get better and move past it, which is what you want to do, but it's like a self-defeating thing. And I do it all the time. Like thankfully the guys I train with are really great about it, and now they know it's a thing too, so they look out for it when I get all, you know, poopy about it. But you know, it's really something toxic that needs to be avoided as much as you can, even if that means asking for help from people. Like, hey man, like just
For sure.
help me out here. Like,
Yeah, for
it's
sure.
terrible.
One thing I share with folks is, adopt a thick skin and a short-term memory kind of attitude where if it happened 10 minutes ago, dissect it for a second or two, take something away from it from a learning perspective, and then forget about it. Forget it. It's already gone. It's 10 minutes in the past, man. Focus on what's next. That way you get the most out of your training. If we hang on to things, it's sometimes, like you said, it becomes toxic, but also just it ends up being just a spiral of negative thoughts that we just will not allow ourselves to get past. We just keep hanging on to that thing. And that takes conscious thought, it takes discipline, and it takes practice. When we notice these things are happening, take a deep breath and literally breathe it out, let it go. So thick skin, short-term memory will help with, getting the most of your training value.
Yeah, it's yeah, the maximize value. It's for most of us, we don't get nearly as many opportunities as we would really like to be on the range to begin with. So to waste it in something like that it's just silly, you know. And when we're talking about training for potentially life threatening situations and skills and things like that, which if your head's not where it needs to be, I mean, any range session could be. That's safety is a huge thing, but you know, maximize what you're doing there and focus really on what you're trying to achieve. Get, like you said, let go of it, move past it. And yes, I'm saying it out loud after just saying that I suck at it. I know I'm working on it, but it's huge. It's very critical having a positive attitude and just like outlook while you're trying to. I mean, I think sometimes it's easy to get negative about things. Either it's a bad range day or you're shooting with somebody who's better than you, so you're just constantly comparing yourself to them. Those are, again, those are things I think from like a mindset and philosophy perspective. It's healthy to understand the comparison. I think it's damaging though to live in the comparison.
That's a great way to put it. That's a great, a great phrase to help people like recognize it. That's good. Look at it kind of like, often happy, seldom satisfied, right? I'm always trying to achieve, something, but I'm happy with the way things kind of turned out, right? So striving for excellence, knowing that perfect doesn't exist. So what does a perfect run look like? Perfect, it doesn't exist. We're achieving excellence. What we're trying to achieve is just a polished product on a consistent basis. Every now and again, we're going to have a run or a specific drill that's just it wasn't as good as maybe the person to the left or to the right. It's okay to recognize that, and if anything, it feels good to give them a bit of a fist bump, like, "Hey, man, well done! You just crushed that." But try not to live in that moment, right? That you live it in that moment, always comparing ourselves to the person left or right, man. That's going to rob you from growth. It's going to rob you from an enjoyable experience for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a great range day, right? And like you could set new PRs on, I don't know, drills or just accuracy and accountability. You could have by all of your own metrics have a great day, but because you're busy looking at the guy next to you who could be, I don't know, shooting twice as long, or maybe he's got a bunch more money so he has a bunch more ammo. I don't know. There could be a lot of reasons why he seems to be better off. But yeah, it's a lot of it is it's just it's more mental, I think. If anything can be pulled from the conversation that we've just had, right? That the mental side of this is incredibly important. If not essential, I would say it definitely is essential to being squared away mentally if you expect yourself to be squared away physically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, 100%. Everything we do starts between the ears, right? And like we talk often about tools and this gun and that gun, a 4 pound trigger versus, an 8 pound trigger or whatever. And it's like, okay, at the end of the day, what is making that gun go bang? It's this person, right? So if this is not squared away, it does not matter what is in the hand. It really doesn't. I mean, obviously there's components that will help with the efficiency of achieving the desired goal, but it starts here, right? So you get what's going on behind, in between the ears straight, you're going to have a good practice. I'm willing to bet, 9 times out of 10, you're going to have a good practice.
Yeah, and that's not either of us saying that that's the easy part by all means.
No,
It's probably the
no.
hardest. It's the hardest part. That's why
Yes.
it's the most important. But I have had those experiences myself, and I have those struggles consistently, right? As somebody who shoots and trains, like when you have a focused, positive training session, you will see it, you will feel it. And when you don't, you will feel it for sure. It's very counterproductive. It's terrible stuff.
For sure.
But Randy, thank you, sir, so much
Yes,
for sitting
my
down,
pleasure.
getting into this with me. I love it, man. Where can people find you if they haven't listened to the other discussion? I know you got a website, you got Instagram and a YouTube channel and everything. Where can
Yeah.
folks reach out?
Awesome. Thanks, Austin. That was a great discussion, man. I kind of thought it would be. People can reach out to anything Direct Action. So Direct Action Combat Performance. So YouTube channel, Direct Action Combat. Instagram, same. The DA website, www.directactions with an s.ca. So those are the primary platforms. And for folks that are tuning into the DA YouTube channel, we do field a lot of questions that we get viewers interested in. So people that are interested, watch it, like it, subscribe to it, and then provide your comments, your feedback in the comments, and we'll address them. If you guys have specific questions on anything firearms related, CQB related, if I can answer them, I'll do my best to answer them.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I like the channel. I watch the videos. Great stuff. And again, I appreciate the time. I know you're very busy with what's going on and everything that you do with your training company and whatnot. So I implore everybody, go ahead, reach out, like look into the opportunities that are there. And just thank you again, sir, for the time. Very much enjoyed it. Very much appreciate it. I sincerely hope you guys got value out of that conversation. I really enjoyed sitting down talking to Randy, getting into all of that. I think that all the stuff that we hit on in that discussion is incredibly important to understand. You can probably disagree maybe with a couple of those points or those insights. I couldn't think of any that you would, but I think that people's perspective and belief system, especially when you talk about things in the CQB realm, can be very opinionated. It can be very powerful in the way which people believe is the right and wrong way to do things, as well as with shooting and some other stuff. I get it if you have a different point of view, but I think the overall theme of what we're talking about is that open-ended mindset of looking for the next way, looking for the next better way, looking for the next opportunity to grow as an individual, as an operator, as a performer, and really kind of regardless of where that comes from, just thinking about this, it to me, it's very reminiscent of a lot of the discussions that, you saw people having years ago when we were seeing concepts, core competencies, and things that were very, very well understood and well, ingrained in the competition realm of the shooting world that were finally starting to be brought over to the tactical side. Like we had that dichotomy for a very, very long time. This is tactical shooting, and it is different than competition shooting, and we're not going to cross one into the other. Until we did, people started to realize that there is value in what the competition shooters were able to bring to the tactical space in terms of overall performance and effectiveness and efficiency of motion and accountability, things like that. And so we started to see things that were introduced, at least on the tactical side, right? We're seeing things like angled mag pouches. We're seeing guys run things like 2011, I don't say race guns because those are kind of a class all their own, but you're seeing that kind of the reinvention of the 1911 platform in the 2011, which has been adopted by a lot of people that really, really like it from several, top name companies and things. And you've seen some concepts swap back and forth, with optic heights and risers or not, and barrel lengths and stuff like that. There's a give and take between both spheres. And that's only when you're looking at that one very specific instance of the conversation people were having years ago, trying to dismiss competitive shooters, trying to say that what they're doing is a sport and what, we, and in that context, the we was military folk, law enforcement, like what we're doing, certainly not me, but what we were doing is different. So you can't tell me that what you're doing is going to work. And I think that was the problem is that like, yeah, at a one for one, yes, of course it won't work, but are there elements to it that could work? Could I take a competitive shooting course and apply some of these lessons, concepts, philosophy, if you will, right, to how I shoot as a tactical, performer? Yes, you can, which is why we see people, messing with drop leg holsters and different angles to their holster for more ergonomic deployment of a secondary weapon system. We see things like red dots. Red dots were very popular in the competitive shooting space. Now it's a staple of the tactical community, but for years it was not. It was something that, for one reason or another, it was not adopted for a while there. It was because of durability. People that were deploying, people that were very active operationally needed something very robust, very durable, right? So yes, maybe some of like the, I think it's the Seymour sights and everything that were very, very popular when they first came out for competitive shooters. Yes, the military was very slow to adopt those because there were some limitations in durability and performance, probably battery life, right? Okay. Then we get the venerable RMR, which offers all of those benefits with none of those detractors, right? Very durable, good battery life, all the things you're looking for, right? And now you can start to further build that bridge to connect those two realms. And that's just one example, you know? I think the discussion that Randy and I just had shows you that, you know, or at least I think, right, articulates the importance behind having that open mindset, being willing to learn, to hear, just to, even to hear a different way. Because some people are very closed off. They think that, you know, whatever arbitrary skill level or arbitrary level of experience, whether that's like years served in the military or years as a competitive shooter or both or neither, I don't know, right? Means that they don't have to listen to you or hear what you have to say because they've figured out all that needs to be figured out. Not the case. The real people, they'll, now they may be the first ones to show you, hey, this doesn't work and here's why. And it may be that those individuals, right, they have tried what you're suggesting and have worked it out and can share with you the benefits of their experience having tried a tactic or a technique or a best practice or something, right? That's a little bit different discussion, but as somebody who is working very diligently, you and I, right, to try and grow ourselves as capable individuals, whether that be as shooters, as survivalists, whatever it is, right? There is, excuse me, guys, there's a lot of value in that. I apologize, man. Like the weather here is jumping all over the place. We've seen, you know, 15 and 18 degree swings. My body is not loving it, but the discussion, very, very good. You guys, just like the first, if you haven't listened to my original discussion with Randy, it was about 2 months back, in the middle of July, and highly recommend you guys go check it out. He's got a wealth of experience, spent, you know, over 15 years in JTF2, which is the Canadian equivalent to the Tier 1 units that we have here in the United States. So he's been around the block. He's seen some things. He's done some things. Like, this isn't just somebody who it just has an opinion, right? As most of our guests aren't, right? Like, we try to do our best to bring on folks who have value to share with you guys, whether it's as an instructor or as somebody who's out there doing it or both. You know, there's, and it's not to say that, you know, you have to have military experience to be somebody worth listening to. I'll talk to a lot of folks who are just good shooters or good dudes that are smart and well-educated in certain realms and certain areas, you know? and hopefully you guys get that. Hopefully there's benefit. There's an understanding of the value that these discussions hold. And you guys enjoy it. So if you've listened up to this point, seriously, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you being willing to hang out, listen to this week's episode. And, you know, in return, I do hope that this is bringing you guys what you're looking for. This is the kind of content and conversations that is really going to benefit those of you out there listening, trying to get better, looking for ways to improve yourself and your abilities, or maybe even, you know, giving you some things you can take away or take back to your training group and go, hey, you know, we should lift each other up. You know, we should be more positive on the range. We should be less critical, or we should try new things, or let's all go take a class together, whatever. I mean, I just hope that this, in one way or another, this discussion and all of these discussions I have with all of these exceptional people that I'm blessed to interact with, I hope that it is benefiting you in a way similar to how it's benefiting me. So that's all I have for this week's discussion, folks. Thank you for hanging out as always. Hope everybody is enjoying the start of fall. Stay safe out there. God bless. And like we always say here, work hard, train smarter, and be prepared.